My name is Greg. For those of you that don't know me, I'm one of the guys on the team here. If you're new here, if you're visiting, welcome. We're glad that you're here. Bring you up to speed. We've been going through the parables of the kingdom in the New Testament Gospels this summer, and we are going to be continuing on this morning. We are going to be talking about specifically the parable of the talents that's found in Matthew. So if you have copy of the scriptures, go ahead and turn to Matthew if you want. Otherwise, it's going to be on the screen. So there we go. Parable of the talents. Basically, if you could take the parable of the talents and boil it down to one word, it would be this: stewardship. So we're going to be talking about stewardship this morning. And how many of you admit it? How many of you are right now groaning on the inside? Nervous laughter. Okay, yes. When you think of stewardship, what immediately comes to mind? Pastor's going to be talking about stewardship. What immediately comes to mind? Come on, be honest. Money. Going where? To the church. Money going to the local church. That is a part of stewardship, but it's not entirely all of what stewardship is. And so what I want to do is, I think in order to understand the parable of the talents and what stewardship is, we've got to go to another parable. It's from the book of Second Opinions. It's called the Parable of the Cereal Aisle. Okay? The Parable of the Cereal Aisle. I know a couple. My wife and I have known this couple since all of us were single. You know, we went to school together, got married about the same time, had a bunch of kids. They still live in the area. A great couple, love Jesus. They had a situation a number of years ago where within their family dynamics, extended family, there was a young lady that got pregnant that was not married outside the family. What are we going to do? Decided we're not going to abort the child. But what are we going to do? So this particular couple said, we've got a lot of kids. They're grown. They're older. We'll adopt this one as our own. So they take this little boy into their household. They adopt it as their own. Little guy was born small, lots of health problems. Fortunately, I mean, in God's goodness, the mom, her background is in nursing. She stayed home to raise, train, school her kids. So this little guy immediately got put into a situation where 24/7 nursing care was available through mom. A lot of problems growing up on oxygen from birth, on oxygen for a number of years. And then I would see the mom and the dad, you know, occasionally say, "How's the little guy doing?" Fine, you know. The thing is that this little guy, as he started to grow, started to take on some independence, his favorite meal, his delight in his life was breakfast, okay? And when he would go to the cupboard, this is what he would get. Open up the cupboard, there's a box of Cheerios, okay? And so he would have Cheerios every morning, loved breakfast. One day when he was about 4 or 5 years old when he was finally able to take him outside the house with the portable oxygen, I believe. And so the mom was telling me the event where they took him for the very first time to the grocery store. Okay, he had never been out before. Okay, put him in the cart going up and down, and they turned the corner and he saw this. All sorts of options in reality opened up. The reality of cereal and what was really available just rocked his world. He was delighted. This is a lot like stewardship. Because stewardship, many times we think of, well, that's just finances that are applied into the local church. That's Cheerios. But when we look at the scriptures, stewardship is so much more than that, okay? And that's what we're going to talk about, okay? Now, just to be clear, is Greg saying that giving church to the local, giving money to the local church, that that's not important? Am I saying that? A little louder. Good. Are we clear on that? Okay. My theology, I'm very pro Cheerios. All righty. I am very pro. Scriptures talk about part of our stewardship is giving finances to the local church. But it is so much more than that. And that's what we're going to explore today when we look at the parable of the talents. Okay, the parable of the talents. In essence, when God calls us to breakfast, he's offering a whole lot more than just Cheerios. So, again, a parable is really Jesus is giving a response to maybe a situation or a certain question. Matthew chapter 24, 25, commonly referred to as the Olivet Discourse. This is where Jesus is talking a lot about him coming back again and what that will be like. And so the disciples are asking a question in verse 24 early on. It says, tell us, when will these things be and what will be the sign of your coming, the end of the age? The scriptures tell us that Jesus came the first time, born, lived, no sin, died on the cross, rose again, ascended into heaven, said, I'm going to make a place prepared for you, and I'm coming back to reality. So they're saying, you know, when you leave and you come back, and you're going to start to establish this new heaven and this new earth, the end of the age, what's it going to be like? So he gave them the parable of the fig tree, which, like, you know, there are signs, and he talks about that in chapter 24. Then in chapter 25, he talks about the parable of the virgins, and that the idea in that parable was that while you're waiting for him, it's a reality. He is going to come back, so wait expectantly. Okay? And then the parable of the talents, which we're going to talk about today, is that while you're waiting for me to come back, I want you to work exceptionally with me, to be about my Father's business. And so the parable of the talents, the big E on the I chart, is that while we're waiting for him to come back, we are to work and labor exceptionally with him. So the question then is, well, what does it mean to work with Jesus until he comes? Okay, work with Jesus until he comes. So what does that mean? Well, does it mean that we should invest time in the church and Bible study? Yes. Oh, okay, good. Yes, okay. But what about the time when we're not in church? What about the time when we are not specifically in a Bible study? Does working with Jesus, does that mean that we should be intentional about sharing the gospel? Yes. Okay. What about the times when we're not specifically actively sharing the gospel? Is that also working with Jesus until he comes? Okay. What about, should we be giving generously to the local church? Yeah. Is that working with Jesus? Yes. Okay. Cheerios. Yes, but what about the rest of the time and the money that's been entrusted to us? Is that also working with Jesus until he comes? The answer to all of these is found, the answer to all these is a resounding yes. And they actually find their answers in this whole idea of stewardship. So where do we get this idea, this doctrine of stewardship? Well, it begins really back in Genesis, okay? What we find in Genesis is that God is, if we look at chapter 1 and 2, God is forming things. First 3 days of creation, he's forming something. Next 3 days of creation, he's filling those things. Forms them and then fills them. We also see that the account that he created Eden, this paradise, this garden. And then when Eden was created, it said he took man and put him into the garden. He formed it and then he filled it. And what we see is that while God is doing things in these first two chapters of Genesis, God is making things out of nothing. He's working. But then we also see that he's given Adam some responsibility. He goes, look, I formed the garden, put Adam in it, and he told Adam, I want you to tend and keep this, which means to cultivate it, grow it, protect it, care for it, nurture it. That's the idea. Everything we see God is doing some things all by himself, but everything that God gave Adam to do, God was with him. A good example is when God made all the animals, and then he said, why don't you give them some names? Okay? I made them. Why don't you name them? Everything that Adam was given, whether it was caring for the garden, caring for the beasts, everything that he cared, these were mandates that he gave, that God gave him, and God was with him all the time. Seeing that Adam was a male, all alone, he goes, it's not good to complete creation. He said, I'm going to give him a wife. Going to make them. They're going to come together. And then he gives this mandate to the man and the woman at the end of Genesis chapter 1. And in essence, this is what it says. He said, let us make man in our image. So in the image of God, he made them. Male and female, he created them. So the man and woman come together, and he said, look, now here's the mandate. Be fruitful and multiply. Go out and fill the earth. Subdue it and rule over it. I'm giving you every seed-bearing plant, every fruit-bearing tree, every beast that's on the field, everything that's in the sky. You know, everything is yours. What I want you to do is you're not to stay in Eden. I form the earth, go out and fill it. And that's what many theologians refer to as the creation mandate. God made it, and then he says, look, I'm going to commission, you're with me. Everything that you know about me, everything that you've seen from me, everything that you know about me, the way that I do things, go out as my image bearers. And let's do this together. Well, of course, we see in Genesis 3, sin came in, man rebelled, and all sorts of stuff hit the fan. But this creation mandate still applies. This is still part of God's plan for us. So what is a steward? Let's boil it down to maybe a workable definition so that we can go through this parable with a lot more clear understanding. Really, a steward, stewardship is being responsible for making the most of the people, opportunities, and resources so that God may be honored, others would be benefited, and that our joy might be full indeed. Just like with Adam and Eve, so are we as his people. He's made stuff, and he says, I want you to co-labor with me, and I want you to take responsibility for all of these things, people, opportunities, and resources. Okay? So let's go into the parable, and let's start picking apart. And what we're going to see is certain characteristics or aspects about what stewardship is. So in chapter 25, Jesus is answering the question then, what do we do? What's it going to be like until you come? And he said, look, I'm going to come back. Here, what I want you to do while you're waiting and you're looking at signs, I want you to work. I want you to work exceptionally for me. So he said this, it's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. Okay. In this parable, we're going to see that there's a master and there is servants. Many of the parables that we've talked about, very similar kind of paradigm in the story. And in this one, same thing. The master, the man who owns all this stuff, that represents God, yes, and that his servants, his slaves, are those people who are in his visible kingdom that we see here, not fully formed yet, people that love him and obey him, and people that are out for their own. But he says this, a man, he's going to go out on a journey. He's going to leave. So he calls his own slaves, and he entrusted his possessions to them. First of all, what we see in stewardship in this is that it's highly relational. As we'll see, this guy owns a lot of stuff. And what he does, he said, I'm going to call my own slaves, my own servants. I'm going to call them to myself. And I'm going to give them, and I'm going to entrust to them some of my possessions. See, and what we see, the amount of what he gives them is incredible. He's going to give them huge responsibilities. What he does not do is say, I'm going to go outside of this area of my responsibility. I'm going to go out, I'm going to get some outside resources. I'm going to try and get some experts in this field or that field. I'm going to call in these experts. I'm going to form a board of advisors. I'm going to let them do it. No, he says, I'm going to call my own people to me, and I'm going to let them do this. It's highly relational. Highly relational. It also involves people, opportunities, and resources. Back in the first century, when Jesus is talking about this parable, agricultural economy. And so those that were wealthy, had great means, were usually those that had lots of land, lots of animals, probably lots of crops, lots of stuff, and lots of people who were part of this organization, so to speak. He was taking care of all of them. So it does. It involves people. Involves opportunities, all the circumstances that come, and then all the resources, and it involves a high degree of trust. Said, I'm entrusting this to you. You know, a good synonym for stewardship, if you want to think about it, is our modern day equivalent of a trust. Someone puts all of their resources into a trust so that someone who has been appointed by the person with their resources, that upon their death, this trust goes to these people. They're going to do with it what I want as the owner. Very similar thing. He's entrusting this. It's a high degree of trust. Highly relational. It's God with his people. It's a relationship. So he goes on to say this. So to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on a journey. So he's going to give out talents. This is not the ability to sing, okay? This is not the ability to do it. It's not about your skills, so to say. A talent is a unit of measure back in the first century. Not a real common one, probably similar to like what we would say today. We have units of measure that people aren't familiar with. A peck. A bushel. Farmers, they go, I know what a bushel is. Okay, a city folk, okay. Those sorts of things. So he gave him a talent, okay. It's not a skill, it's a unit of measure. How much is a talent? A talent is a unit of measure about 200 pounds of something. In big transactions, it was gold, okay. Big transactions, it was gold. All right, 2019, 2 days ago, price of gold was $1,410.35 per ounce. That would be the equivalent today as if someone wrote you a check for $4.5 million. That comes from the Greek phrase, that's a lot of jack, okay? So he gave one $4.5 million. He gave another $9 million. He gave another $22.5 million. Okay, how many of you ever had this, played this mental game? If I ever won the lottery, I would, what would you do? What would you do? If someone came up and said, you know what, you had a beneficiary, maybe it's your parents, maybe it's an uncle, whoever it is, but all of a sudden say, they have a trust, and now they're entrusting to you, here's $22.5 million. Or on the low end, $4.5 million. What are you going to do with it? It's like, here, it's yours. I'm going to trust you with it. What are you going to do with it? Well, I'll tell you one thing that you can do. You're going to reveal your heart. Whatever you decide to do with it, you're going to reveal your heart. Notice I didn't say you're going to do something bad with it or something good with it. All I know is you're going to do something that's going to reveal your heart. The other thing is that there was kind of like a, if you would talk about a talent in the first century, the other thing is that there was also an idea like a guesstimate. What would a talent be? And they would say, well, you know, it's about 20 years' wage, okay? Maybe not $200 or 200 pounds of gold, but it's like, guesstimate, it's about 20 years' worth of your labor, okay? That's a lot of time. It's either a lot of money or a lot of time, or in this case, probably both. So let me ask you this. What has God entrusted to you over the past 20 years? If you're a young person here, say, look, I'm in college. I'm not even 20 years old. Okay. What do you think God's going to entrust to you over the next 20 years? What has God entrusted to you? You might want to start writing this stuff down. For some of us, he's given us a spouse. He's given us some children. He's put us in a certain place to work. There are some things that we're responsible for. And if you add it all up, it's like, you know, that's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of people that are kind of like in my life right now. There's been a lot of opportunities that have been going on. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of opportunities. And there are a lot of resources. Now, the scriptures are clear. The earth is the Lord and everything in it. Everything comes from the Greek word everything, okay? But what he does is he gives it to us. He goes, here, I'm going to entrust it to you. I want you to be responsible for it. The other thing he said, look, he gave to each one according to their abilities. He gave 1-5, 1-2, and 1-1. And it's not, you don't look at it and just go, well, how come this guy only got one? Is God greedy? Is God, stingy? Is he not a giver? Yes, he's a giver. But he gave 1-5, 1-2, and 1-1 according to their abilities. According to their abilities. In our home, my father, his wife, my mom, died about 6 years ago. My dad passed away about 6 weeks ago. I'm the executor of his trust. So I'm working through a lot of that stuff. Went down to get the license and the title from his 2017 Toyota Tacoma truck. And he made very clear, Greg, you don't get this. One of your children is going to get this, and it's going to be one of your sons. All right, now I'm not going to say why. Why can't the girl drive the truck? Because my daughter Grace is chomping at the bit for it. But it's like, no, that's his. That's what he wants. But I'm down there with my little boy Caleb, who's 12, and we're talking. And they said, you know what? You've got to give us a certificate of the trust from the courts that shows that you're in charge of this. And I said, okay. And he's going, Dad, what's a trust? So I'm explaining it to him, and I said, you see, it's like all of Grandpa's stuff and all his cash that he has left over, it's put into like this account, and then I'm in charge to giving it out to whoever he wants or what he wants for it. So the wheels are spinning. Dad, do you have a trust? And how am I involved with this? I said, yes, I have a trust. Now, your older brother Sam is in charge. And that look like me? So, look, son, do you think that you could be trusted with all this? Yeah, why not? Yeah, you can't, okay? But you know what? It's not that I love Sam more than you. I love you, okay? You're in this, okay? But there are certain things that he can do because he's older and more mature. And because of his abilities, I'm going to let him do this. You, because of your abilities, I'm going to give you other responsibilities. Okay? So when we get home, go out and clean up your room. So, it's not that I love him less. It's according to his abilities. Okay? But anyway, he gave according to what? Let me ask you this. How has God made you? You got this. Look, you write down that I got all this stuff that he's entrusted to me. Okay? I mean, you think about it. Okay? Maybe a spouse, family, maybe children, 1-5 more. I don't know. A job, a place to live, opportunities. How has God made you who he's asking to be responsible and to be entrusted with these things? Okay? Now, I'm not asking, are you a five-talent guy or are you a one-talent guy? Uh-uh. How has he made you? What are your abilities? You know, it says that in the scriptures that God, you know, specifically and intentionally, he knitted and he formed you in the womb. And at a specific time, he did this. He knew your days before there was even one. And according to his grand sovereign plan, he bore you into this world at a certain time, at a certain location, in a certain family. And as you've grown, maybe you've trusted him, maybe you haven't, but you've seen him move you, and you're here. You're in this place. You're working with a certain job, with certain people. You live in a certain neighborhood. What significant events has God led you through? You say, you know what? He has really shaped my life with these things. He's given me some responsibilities for some of his stuff, and I've learned some things, and all of a sudden there's more responsibilities. There's these events that he's shaped me. He's taken me through. So the question is, why did he make you that way? If you think, it's like, look, he's given me these skills or abilities. This is what I'm good at. This is what I like to do. This is what I don't like to do. This is what I'm not good at. But he made me specifically and intentionally, you know, and he's given me some experiential training or maybe some educational training or some on the job training, but he's used those things to all of a sudden build into your life. Why? Why did he do that? Why did he make you this way? Why did he entrust you with these things for you, with these abilities to be responsible for? Well, the answer is stewardship. He's got a plan, and he wants you to be part of the plan. You're not an afterthought. You're a forethought in his planning. You're not something that's ambiguous out there. You have his full attention. And he's working your plan, and you are a significant part of it. So he gave him these servants of his a lot of stuff. And it says, and then he left. What did he tell them to do with it? Nothing. There's no instructions given. Okay? Dad, you open up that toy, that thing, the swing set, whatever it is, list of instructions. What if it's not there? For most men, we don't care. We're not going to look at it anyway. There's no instructions as to what to do with it. But look what these servants did. It says immediately. Immediately the one who received the five talents went and traded with them and gave five more. The same manner the one who had received two talents gained two more, but the one who received the one talent went away, dug in the ground, and hid his master's money. So you got two of them that are really going to go out and do some shaking and baking here. It says immediately. Immediately they knew what they should be about. How did they know what they were about? It is knowing their master. They have a relationship with their master. They have seen what the master does. They understand what the master is about. They understand what the master wants done. And so when they received it, immediately they went out and did something with it. They had a plan. Maybe not fully formed, but they knew what to do. They didn't sit around and just kind of go, well, "What do we do now? Should we put it in the stock market? It wasn't around. Should we get a CD of savings? Wasn't worth much back then anyway." So, but the idea is that it says they went out and they traded. They labored. Okay, they labored with it. How do you think they labored? Not a trick question. Probably with not only the ideals, the goals, the principles, the heart of the master, but also with the abilities that they have. Using the way that they were put together, the way that they were made, their strengths, their gifts, their abilities, what God had made them good at, and all of a sudden they are working it. And the idea was that it was for gain. He goes, I want a gain out of this. You know, if we go back to the lottery question, what are you going to do if you have $4.5 million, okay? Now, here's what we as Christians, we sometimes do. Well, you get in your little small group or you come to church. Hey, what do you, Sam, Susie, Tina, Bob, what are you going to do with that? Well, since I'm in church, I better say I'm going to give a good part of it away. You know, yeah, I'm going to give it. Yeah, okay. Do you notice that none of this was given away? Is Greg saying, don't give? No. A little louder. No. I'm going to be evaluated on this message. Yeah, Greg's not saying don't give. That's the Cheerios box, and that's okay. Very pro-Cheerios, okay? Generosity is the hallmark of God. Generosity is the hallmark of his people. But they gained. They made the most of what they were given. They worked with their abilities immediately to make whatever they were responsible for as good as they could get. They gained. There was really no... The idea is that the master didn't give him a list of instructions and say, I specifically want you to do this. What he did is he goes, you know me, you know what I'm about. There are things that I'm for, there are things that I'm against. I have some laws, statutes, and principles about things that we should be about, things that we're not about. You know my heart. You know what I want to see happen here. So go out and let's do this. Let's let good things run wild. Let's see what we can do here. And they gained. And they gained. This principle with people, opportunities, and resources, it's really repeated again, this theme in the New Testament. I love this verse in Ephesians. Personal and time management verse. Therefore, be careful how you walk. That's the word that's really translated how you live. How are you going to live your life? He goes, well, not as unwise men, but as wise. Making the most of your time because the days are evil. He said, be wise, don't be unwise. And because the days are evil, what I want you to make the most of whose time? Your time. Your, translated singular, you. Does the Apostle Paul, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, tell us what exactly we're supposed to do? No. This is, again, highly relational. Knowing what God wants. Knowing what pleases him. It's not going off on your own. But he said, look, it's like Adam in the garden before the fall. God's saying, let's do this together. Make the most of your time. Now, some of you might have an ESV Bible, an NIV, King James, and the making the most is translated redeem. Greg, I think as a Christian, I'm supposed to redeem the time. I'm not supposed to be unwise. I'm supposed to be wise. So I'm going to redeem the time. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means to buy it back. All the stupid, foolish, folly, unwise thing, I'm supposed to take that time and buy it back. I'm to redeem it. Great. What are you going to do with it? Well, I'm going to redeem it because that sounds biblical. Good. What are you going to do with the time that you choose to redeem? In Jesus' name, make the most of it. Make the most of it. Outward focused, honoring God, benefiting others, and you will find joy and satisfaction in your life. You see, with responsibility comes the opportunity to put truth into practice. Do you know why he has entrusted you with certain things? To be responsible for. It's so that with that responsibility comes now the opportunity to put his truth into practice. Do you know why he gave you a spouse? So that you can take the biblical truth about intimate covenant, one flesh marriage, and put it into practice. For your spouse to experience and your kids to witness, and that your neighborhood and others can see. He's given you a responsibility. Do you know why he puts you sovereignly with your skills into where you're working right now? You may be a manager of a division. You might be in a cubicle with no one that reports to you. But you have some responsibilities. And the reason why is that with those responsibilities and why God puts you there is so that you have the opportunity to take his truth, what we understand about him and his ways from the scriptures, and you have the opportunity now to put it into practice. Without responsibility, we have very little opportunity to put his truth into practice, to grow and to impact. You see, with resources comes the opportunity to reveal our hearts. How we interact with people reveals our heart. How we respond to circumstances reveals our heart. How we use resources reveals our heart. And it's not that the people are wrong, the circumstances are wrong, or the resources are bad. It's just that they are all very revealing of our heart. One of the great things, people, is that when we give our life to Jesus, he says he takes out that heart of stone and he puts in a heart of flesh. Think back to your own walk with God, that all of a sudden you started to experience, I have new desires. I have new passions. I have transformed thoughts because I'm no longer alone in rebellion to God, but I'm actually walking with God. And he's given me a new heart that is growing and changing. And now I have the opportunity to know what is wise and what is foolish. And I have these resources and people and opportunities and circumstances. And now I can take his truth and I can put it into practice. And I can honor God at work. I can benefit others in my home. I can experience a joy and a satisfaction while I live in this neighborhood, in this city, wherever he has put me. Here's one of the great things for many, and this is the big E on the I chart. People, if there's one thing to take away, this would be it. God specifically made you. He gave you certain talents, gifts, and abilities. He's taken you through things where those have been modified, changed, increased. And he's sovereignly put you wherever you find yourself right now. And the reason why is because it is significant and intentional for you to be there as part of his overall plan for impacting this world. Well, what about the people in Haiti? He's got people going to Haiti. He's got you right where you're at. Can you go to Haiti? If he calls you, go. But right now he's got you at work. Right now he's got you with these kids. Right now he has you with this spouse of however many years you've been married. You are a significant portion, a significant piece into the overall mission strategy that God has for this place. You are not insignificant because when God called you to himself, he is now significant and he's using you. You fit into his plan. You fit. You're important. You have purpose. You have meaning. God wants to use you. Say, well, I only got one talent. Use it. Use it. You are not insignificant. But the question comes out, well, what is your vision? What's your vision for making the most of the people, opportunities, and resources that have been entrusted to you? Do you have a vision for your family? How are you going to make the most of your marriage? How are you going to make the most to impact and bless and honor the people that you work with and the skills that you've got? Do you have a plan? See, these servants, all it says that immediately they went to it. They had a vision. They knew what they were to be about. And they went after it with great ambition because they loved their master. Do you have a vision for your marriage? Let me ask you guys. I'm going to talk to the men. Greg, you always talk to the men. I love talking to the men. If you've been married over 20 years, has your vision for your marriage maybe, you know what I'm saying? Not like it was when you were like your first couple years of marriage. What would it be like if you've been married 20, 30 years, and you have a husband and wife saying, you know what, I want to make the most of this relationship. You got kids and they're going from junior high to high school. I want to make the most of this time. I don't want to quit. I don't want to coast. I want to make the most of it. So I don't have a vision for those things. What if today you started? What if today you, in a quiet place, you and the Lord say, Lord, you've entrusted me with these things and I want you to walk with me. I want to make the most of these things. No longer on the sideline. I want in the game. So it says, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with him. The one who had received 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I've gained 5 more. His master said, well done, good and faithful servant or slave. You were faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one who had received 2 came up and said, Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I've gained 2 more. And his master said to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful in a few things. I'm going to put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. You notice that one had 5 and he came back with 10. And the master said, well done. Stamp of approval. You are a good and you are faithful and I want you to enter into my joy. And the guy who had 2 and came back with 4 got the same reward. It's not that the one who all of a sudden brought 10 got more. Remember, he gave according to their ability. They both came out with 100% growth. And to both of them, he said, you know what? It's well done. You are good. You are faithful. Enter into the joy of your master. You may have lots of responsibilities. You may have very few responsibilities at this point in time. The question is, what are you doing with them? He's entrusted them to you. I can't help but imagine that the perspective of these servants is one like, this is passionate. This was intentional. It's not that everything went smooth sailing. They probably had crops that didn't grow, animals that died, people who tried to cheat them in business, other servants who weren't with the program. But for the most part, it's like, how would you describe this mission that you were on with what you were entrusted? Joyful. Deep, abiding satisfaction. It's not happy. It's deeper than that. It goes to the core and the guts, and it's like, I am truly fulfilled and satisfied. You see, stewardship is about growing. Making the most of something, being fruitful and multiplying, being faithful and beneficial, and experiencing joy. Whatever God has given you, he's asking you, in our relationship, and you know me, let's make the most of this. Come on, we're on a mission. You are being called to engage and be entrusted. The beginning of that verse, it said, now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts. Do you notice that when the master left, he didn't leave instructions. They knew his heart, but he never told them when he was going to come back. They didn't know. We don't know when Jesus is coming back, okay? We don't know, but we labor to do something exceptional with him. The idea is that, you know, I'm wondering if the master would have held back and say, I'm not going to come back now. I'm going to come back later. I wonder if the 5 would have actually had 7. I wonder if the one that had 2 would have had 4 or 5. That as long as the master was away, there was going to be more growth going on. There wasn't going to be a time where they said, you know what? I'm good. I'm done. I think we've got enough. You see, stewardship is a lifelong mission. making the most of the people, opportunities, and resources that we've been entrusted with. As you continue to grow, the people are going to change. Kids are going to move out. You're going to go to a different neighborhood. Maybe you get a different job. Your resources. Kids move out. They go to college. You're broke. They get out of college. You cash flow like you never had before. You have resources, okay? The thing is that those things change, but being responsible for whatever God brings in, that is your passion. I'm going to make the most out of this. This doesn't allude to it, but what if you suffered loss? What if you suffered loss? People are gone that you want, still want. Resources that are gone that you miss. Opportunities that are no longer there that you wish you had. He's still saying, you know what? Let's make the most of this. Because a sovereign God is leading your life. But there's this one. He's got one talent. What he did is he went and he buried it. When the master came back, he said this, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. I was afraid and I went away and I hid your talent in the ground." See, here, it's yours, okay? You know what stewardship shows? Where your allegiance is in your heart. How you handle people, opportunities, and resources shows what you pledge your allegiance to. Two of them pledged their allegiance to their master, and you could see it. This one, immediately he went and he buried it. This is my opinion. I think, you know why he buried it? Because if the master don't come back, I'm the only one that knows where it's at. This is selfish. This is selfish ownership. This is mine. Ain't nobody going to get it but me. But when the master comes back, he's afraid, and he goes, "Look, you are a hard man, and you do things that no one else does. You know what? You reap where you don't sow. You gather where there's no seed. I mean, you create where there's nothing, but you're a hard man." Well, the master said, "You know what? You're wicked, and you're lazy. You knew that I reap where I don't sow. You know that I gathered where I scattered no seeds. You should have put my money in the bank so I could have interest. I gave you something to grow it." But he goes, "You're wicked and you're lazy." You know what? We started with this creation mandate back in Genesis. This is just like it. You see God in this story? The slave and the master both said, "You know what? I gather where I don't plant. Where I don't sow seed, I can make stuff out of nothing. I'm in charge." And yet the slave says, "You know what, but you're a hard man." But the master didn't repeat that. Just like Eve in the garden. When Satan came up and said, "You know what, are you sure you're not supposed to touch that fruit or eat that?" And Eve said, "You know what, we're not supposed to eat it. We're not even supposed to touch it." God never gave him that command. God said, "Just don't eat it, okay? Because there's consequences." But Eve all of a sudden is starting to trash God. And he goes, "You know what? He said we couldn't even touch it. Because that's what God's like." Eve wanting to go her own way. Adam standing there with a purse doing nothing. Okay? Starting to mock and declare that God is something that he's not. Even when they understand how great he is. He said, "I was afraid." What did Adam and Eve do when they sinned and God came on the scene? What did they do? They hid because they were ashamed and they were afraid. See, you can see Adam and Eve in this story, but the question is, do you see you in the story? See, the issue isn't your resources. It isn't so much about the people and the opportunities, but it's about your heart. Now, there are some of you this morning that may be in this camp. Your allegiance is not to God. Your allegiance is to someone else, probably you. And you don't want to talk about God because it makes you uncomfortable. Because you know something about him, but when you really get down to it, you're afraid. And so what you do in order to mask this, because I get this, I've been there, You want to get a big silver bowl and a golden spoon, and you want to eat a bowl of sawdust. And that's what life is serving up to you right now. It tastes bad, doesn't go down well, leaves a pretty bitter aftertaste. And so your response then is, I want to get a bigger silver bowl, and I want to get a prettier golden spoon, and then I want to pour like almond milk on it. But no matter how much sweetener or almond milk or flavoring you put on sawdust and rocks, it still goes down the same. And the problem, it's not an issue of your bowl, and it's not an issue of your spoon, and it's not an issue of the type of milk or whatever you put on it. It's what's inside that's the problem. It's not your stuff, it's your heart. And it's because you pledged your allegiance to someone other than God, you pledged it to you. The reality is that you will continue to eat sawdust, and you will continue to search for meaning and truth, and you'll try to find it in stuff, and you won't find it. And at the end of your life, you will find that there comes judgment. Weeping and gnashing of teeth, cast out of the presence of the one true living God. Let me talk to you specifically right now, because it doesn't have to be that way. Jesus Christ, God came to earth, lived a sinless life, and he came for you, specifically you. He came for you and your sin, your rebellion, your separation from God. He came for you. And he died on the cross, suffered a horrendous death that he chose, and he rose again out of the grave, came out like a boss 3 days later to show that he is really God. He conquered sin, hell, and the penalty of death. And he will come again. He will come back to make this earth new. And here he will reign with his people forever. That's what waits for you, if you want it. He offers that invitation, and what you have to do is you have to pledge your allegiance to him. Because you can't fix your sin, only he can. But he says he will make you a new creation, and he will give you a new heart, and he will walk with you. And all of a sudden, people, opportunities, and resources become something that you walk with God, and you steward them. And yes, you will start to experience deep things like significance, meaning, joy. For those of you who have pledged your allegiance to Jesus, I want to leave you with this. Many times you say, look, with my sin, I come to the cross. I come to the cross. I come to the cross. Jesus is my Savior. My allegiance is to him. Thank God for that. May I encourage you to look at the tomb, which is empty? Why? Because Jesus got off his blessed assurance and went out and did something. You are a significant part, brother and sister, of God's plan for impacting your home, your marriage, your workplace, this church, and this community. If you say, you know what, I've never thought about how God wants to use me, I encourage you to get alone with him and just say, Lord, you've entrusted me, you've gifted me, and you've placed me. I want to be that good and faithful steward. I want to experience that kind of depth of walking. I want to put your truth into place, and I want to be someone that impacts with you, for you, so that you can be honored, and that others can be benefited, and that you too can experience that deep joy, satisfaction, and fulfillment. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you did not leave us alone in our sin. You do not leave us alone as we walk with you. Bring to mind what you're calling us to and what you're missioning us to go and do. And Lord, would you please show us how we can honor you and how we can benefit others in your name with everything that you've entrusted us. And to you be the glory. Amen. You're dismissed.